differently for years and years and years. We'll have in-house, like this right here. You always have a better attendance. And the other times we'll go to a hotel. I usually go on a Friday, start at noon. So you have to take a half a day off work, have some sessions, then have a date night that night and enjoy the date with your wife. And then come back on the Saturday morning and have a few sessions. So just got done doing ours. Good benefit, always helps out. And as we had the main session, and then we had a break, then we went to a split session, and all the men came over in a room just like this here, and the speaker got up and said, what do you want to do? We didn't want to come here. They wanted it. They have their session. So I guess we'll just talk over here. You know, we don't need the help anyway. So that is a typical man right there. That is a typical man. I don't know why I'm here. I'm here for her. Let her do her thing, you know. So, but I am glad you're here. I think it's important. I will say this. It is points. You will score points for being here for your wife. That's big time. I like, how many remember the red, the old-time comedian, Red Skelton? Red Skelton, he was great. He always said good night and God bless. I always thought he was a spiritual man. So Red Skelton, because it's always best to hold your hand with your wife when she's shopping. She'll spend less money. So that's why you do that, right? And I can give you the best tip of advice about being a married man. You ready to go? Never, never ask your wife to make you a sandwich while she's mowing the lawn. Don't do that, okay? So if she's doing that, it's great. A man went to confession, and he told the priest, I must confess I lied. And the priest said, you lied. I lied on my taxes. You lied on your taxes. Yes, I put down I was the head of the household. And that's not true, so I'm not that. Okay, here we go. I'm going to say this up front, and I'm going to say it precursive to say this. I have a hard time having respect for men. That's like the least likely thing you want to say to this group. My dad left my mom when I was 18 months. So I never had a home where my dad and mom were together. When I first started understanding life a little bit, of course, I was living with a stepdad. And then my dad may pick me up, may not pick me up. He would tell me to pick me up, but didn't pick me up. And we go to the stepmom, and then went through the next one. She had a new husband, so another stepdad. And he had another wife, so I had a new stepmom. So honestly, I had very little respect for my dad. So then my second stepdad, I told you, murdered my mother. So that didn't go over too good. It's in broad daylight, 4:31, a Saturday afternoon, Keyhole Restaurant, Dayton, Ohio. I walked to the front of the car, put his hand on, walked by the side. Okay, 38 caliber snub-nosed handgun stuck inside the window. Murdered my mother. Then he committed suicide. So then I went to church. The pastor who led me to Christ became a drunk. I thought, okay, this is not going very well. The second pastor I had was voted out for womanizing. And he was visiting all the ladies of the church and just womanizing. My third pastor was actually left in the middle of the night because his wife got caught shoplifting. And so I thought, this whole man thing, I'm not sure about this man stuff, you know. And then you look at the ideals that we have in America. So my out was I got into athletics. So I started playing ball and had a coach. And so most of my mentoring, I can say this, literally came from coaches and not from peers like a father or a grandfather. I didn't have a grandfather. I never knew of a grandfather. And so we all have different perspectives. So I want to say that to you. If you ever want to stand out in an area, just be a man. If you ever want to stand out in an area, just be a man. And again, men are the side, well, I already know it all. I don't need to hear this. Just okay, just get the session over. I'm only here for her. Well, you're going to waste your time. I do know this, that I have a man in our church, well, not in our church, but his name is Homer Lundberg, billionaire, and he owns all the rice fields in Northern California. He's amazing. But he said a statement I'll never forget. He said, no one is as smart as we all are smart. No one is as smart as we all are smart. I work on a mission, and I help men, and I enjoy it. I've done it for 32 years. I go there a minimum of twice a week, and just takes the time with them, nothing more. We invite them for our church is a place for them, and we want that. So we go there, and we just try to find out what happened. Why are they there? There's drug addiction, there's domestic abuse, and there's all the other stuff. Alcohol, that's a big one. But I always say this, here's a guy I got right now. He's 37, he's just got his fifth DUI. His lady was in the car, she got hurt this time. He hit a woman and two girls. They got hurt badly. So he's looking at vehicular, not manslaughter, but gross negligence, bodily intent. And he's a billionaire. Had so many chances, just didn't learn. Men tend to learn by hard times and not just good times. Victories are for celebration. Defeats are for learning. I guarantee you, when you learn, you get better. Going to stay with the classic rebuilding a car and so forth. And I'll just kind of stay with that little theme there and kind of go down a few things. Number one, I say this. Let me pray for us. Father in heaven, I have no greater joy than to teach men. In all reality, there's a great drought of real manhood in our country today. It's true. We don't have the spiritual leaders. We don't have the financial earners. We don't have the examples for children. But we got a lot of men. So Lord, I pray today you'll focus us. You'll focus us on what would be a real man. How can I be a real man? What should I do? And then put into the text of how can I be a good husband? How can I be a better man in this marriage thing? Help us there. For Christ's sake, I pray with thanksgiving. Amen. Staying along with the car thing, I would say this. Be very attentive to all of the warning lights. We know in a car, when a red light comes on, and it's the engine light, we are always told to pull over immediately, turn the car off, and get some help. You may be low of oil, you may have been blown a head gasket, or whatever the case may be, but whatever you do, don't continue to run that car. It's amazing because we as men, all the way through the Bible, believe that we can go and go and go and never get caught. In our society where I am in Northern California, they call themselves the kingfish. The kingfish. He's the big king. He's down there. But he never gets caught. He never gets caught. Well, there is a day of reckoning. I think about David. David, who is the king of all Israel. A man after God's own heart. With the day of battle, when all the kings are out there fighting the battle, David stays home. As David stays home, he sees the lady bathing. He inquires about the lady. The lady summons to him. Now, may I say this, gentlemen? You and I will never be able to fix what our eyes see, all right? But we can go ahead and determine what will harbor in our mind. I cannot determine what birds fly over my head, but I can determine what nests on top of it, okay? And so you and I are going to see a lot of things. I was in an airport not long ago, and I have to always watch my eyes, and there's a lot of people in the airport. I'm coming down one of the longest escalators you've ever seen. My wife is with me down at the bottom of the escalator, waiting right down there, so you have to see it, is this voluptuous woman. Large-breasted, short skirt, hair all done up in big curls, things like that, and then she's looking up, waiting for a man, and so it's kind of hard to avoid her, so I just turn and talk to my wife, and I said, babe, my eyes are only for you. My eyes are only for you. We get down a little closer. She's down there waiting. I keep looking at my wife. And I said, my eyes are only for you. And I got all the way down at the bottom. And I was being cordial. We walked off. I said, hello. It was a man dressed up in a woman's clothing. I'm glad I didn't look at her. Thank God. Oh, that would have been rough looking at that woman right there. David takes Bathsheba. You know who Bathsheba is? She's Uriah's wife. You know Uriah is the great warrior. You know who are best friends? David and Uriah. They worked out together. They did situations together. They trained in army together. Uriah was a right-hand man. Can you imagine your best friend in church cheating on your wife? David didn't think he'd get caught. Can you imagine the day he's sitting on the throne when a chamberlain comes over? Excuse me, David, King David, there's a lady here to see you. I'm not stumbling any lady. I know she said she needed to see you. I don't need to see any lady. Her name is Bathsheba. Oh, well, sure. And Bathsheba comes. David, we agreed not to see each other. It was just a 1-900. What are you doing? I'm a child. Oh. We can all pick our sin. We cannot choose our consequence. We can all choose the time of our sin. We cannot choose the time of our consequence. You ever really think about that story? Well, this is not good. This is going to look bad on me. I really can't have this, so how am I going to cover this thing up? She's with child, and they're away, and this is not good. And so I'll bring Uriah back. I'll tell him we're going to honor him, and it's good for him. And if your wife misses you, she writes him a letter, send him back. So you know the story. Uriah comes back. Sure enough, he makes him a feast, and Uriah did not go home. He stayed out front of his wife's house. That's not a good man. That's a crazy man. What's wrong with that guy, you know? And so he stays out in front there, and the next day he goes to the king, and he said, "Were you with your wife?" And no, and now he realizes I haven't covered up my story. So the second night, he gets Uriah drunk, then sends him home. Now he'll be the wife and labor with his wife, and they'll be able to say it's Uriah's son. Well, that doesn't work either. So now David lies again. He says, "Okay, go back to Joab on the battlefront. Here, please take this note with you." And the note was sealed by the king. You're not allowed to open it. It was the very death wish of Uriah himself, who's carrying this death wish to Joab. Joab opens it up. I'm sure it says something like this. "I cheated on Uriah's wife. I have to kill him so I look good." It didn't say that. It said, "Dear Joab, I'm sorry to say I brought Uriah back because he's incompetent. He actually is a troublemaker. And so, but out of dignity to my heart, let's go ahead and let him die in battle. How's that sound? Put him up the front, remove the troops, he'll die, and he'll look good, we'll all look good, and the problem's over." Joab says, "What a great guy David is. He's saving this guy's face." So sure enough, he does what he says. He puts Uriah in front of the battle front, withdraws the troops, gets killed, and now Joab reports back there, "You are such a great king, saving Uriah's face. He did a great job. He's dead. You're good. We're all looking good now." He's a liar. Now watch this. That was a man. That bothers me. Can I ask you a question? How much integrity do you have? We don't talk about cars, money. Can I tell you that anybody can make a buck? Anybody can make a buck. Work hard, cheat, swindle, whatever you have to do. Anybody can make a buck. I'm talking about integrity. Ask yourself, am I a man of integrity? Well, I think about Job. Even Satan said, "So what are you doing down here?" And so I'm looking to and fro on the earth. And if you notice my man Job, a man that is upright, a man that escheweth evil, a man that hath integrity. He said, "Yeah, but you just have Job as you protect him." He said, "No, Job's a good man. You can have him, just don't touch him." Job lost 10 kids in one day. He lost 10 kids in one day. Imagine a funeral of 10 caskets, all of your own children. He lost his entire wealth in one day. He lost his grounds and his means and herds and servants. I mean, just devastating. Job said, "Naked came I into the world, naked shall I leave, but blessed be the name of God." Job had integrity. Job had a handshake that meant something. Job's word was good as gold. So when it comes to men, one of the things we have to really look at is gotta watch the warning lights. I don't know if you've ever had a personal conversation that God initiated. So what are you doing? His name was James Duke. James Duke grew up in Southern California, this area. He's enamored by the Sea World, all the porpoises and dolphins, and boy, the whale, killer whales, and he's enamored with the killer whales. As he's growing up, he'd go to the park as much as he could. He'd watch these massive animals do this stuff. You ride on top of them. They put you on the nose and throw up in the air. He was just mesmerized. This is amazing. So James Duke himself said, I want to do that. I want to do that. So one day after SeaWorld closed, he hid himself behind a dumpster compartment inside the park. James Duke, 22 years of age. After everyone was left, park was done, park was empty, he made his way to the animal and the whale and the dolphin arena right there, SeaWorld. He knew the place. He'd been there many times. He walked down to the left, all the way down to the bottom. He went over there, and there was a fence that says, do not enter. Do not enter. He went around the side, and he jumped the fence. Walked down a narrow pathway back behind where all the other tanks are. It said, no trespassing. Only authority people here. No trespassing. He again climbed and jumped another fence. He walked down another corridor, and there was the big pool, and there was orca the whale. Do not enter. Do not enter. James Duke stripped off his clothes besides his underwear and jumped in. He wanted to be with that massive killer. Thought he could ride it. Thought he could be on top of it. Early next morning, about 5:55 a.m., people started showing up for the work. As they went down to that pool, they found the killer whale, lifted it, beast up on the side. And next to him was the bloated blue body of James Duke. That killer whale had pinned him on the bottom. That killer whale had played with him. That killer whale had taken him down below. And so, no longer alive, but now all battered, all blue, all bruised from head to toe, now bloated from the water, James Duke. Watch this. He crossed every warning sign there was. Can I tell you something, gentlemen? Does your wife ever say this? She's got to watch that girl. Something's bad about that. I work in the mission. I just told you that. I'm helping a young man. Don't need to know him. I've known him for probably 15 years. Got out again. My wife said, honey, I just don't feel comfortable around him. I can say this. I'm just working with him. I'm just trying to help him out. I don't mind having him over to the house, watch a ball game, and my wife just says, honey, I just don't feel comfortable. Watch this, John. That's a red light. That's not the light that says, don't tell me what to do. That's a red light that says, my wife feels uncomfortable. I can help him for a little time. I live with her the rest of my life. Take good signs of listening, watching for the warning signs. Solomon, I mentioned this the other day. My son, give me the heart, let the eyes observe my ways. Then Samson, same way. I don't know if you ever read a book called Samson Syndrome. If you're a man, it's probably a good book to read. And Samson was the strongest man on earth, he became weak. Solomon was the smartest man on earth, became stupid. It's an amazing man when he goes forth on his own. There is a way which seemeth right in a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. And some of you are going to see some things in your light as a man, but I'll just say, you've got to beware of the warning lights. Be careful of the warning lights. Be careful of the warning lights. Number two, I'll say this, got to keep your windshield clean. Got to keep your windshield clean. So watch for those warning lights. God will give them to you. Number two, you've got to keep the windshield clean. What do you mean by that? Probably the number one thing I deal with men in our church and for all these years is pornography. Pornography. Thing is, now it's available right on your phone. And there's no firewalls. During the very first year of cell phones, when the internet became, all available on cell phones, first year that the pornography on cell phones outgrossed the entire NFL and AFL and all the proceedings for football. Billions of dollars. All because there's easy, I'm not liking this in here. There we go. I'm just tripping on the bottom of it. So there's no firewalls. I'm going to just take a moment to just talk to you personally. I don't know how much you've ever counseled somebody.
I found this on the web.
I'm sorry.
Take a moment to talk to you personally.
I'm going to talk to you personally. She's on, okay? And it was off. There you go. Kind of my office for a minute. The lady makes an appointment. My wife is there, or she's right in the next room. Doors open, windows open. And she says, "Pastor, I got to talk to somebody. I got to talk to somebody." And she begins to cry. I said, "I'm sorry for whatever you're going through." And I say this: be simple concerning evil. I don't know all the details. I believe in this. I'll try to help fix the washing machine. You take care of the dirty laundry. I never asked him questions. But she began bawling. Here's what she said: "I feel like trash." I said, "I'm sorry." "No, I feel like trash." My husband looks at this pornography on his phone. He sees these naked women. He sees these lewd acts. And here I am, right here. I know he's doing it. She's what makes me feel like. I feel like trash. I'm real. I'm warm. I'm flesh. He can touch me. That's just a picture. You know how low I feel? I feel like trash. So go help her. Tell her now. I choose this. I choose this over you. Well, I just don't. What the helper? Well, I just don't. What was the teacher? What's this? Are you so caught up in the fantasy of fantasy life? The girls kind of stripping down and making themselves look good and enticing you and things like that. What's this? They don't do that. No girl does that. No girl is going to tantally slip off her clothes and bare herself and dance in front of you and grab you and take you into her arms. No girl does that. It's a fantasy. They pay to do that, to seduce you. Pornography. Pornography. It's brutal. For a man thinketh in his mind, commit adultery with a woman, so has he. And now we build up some desires we cannot live or scripturally fulfill. And so I want to help you with this. You need to really work on keeping that windshield clean. You better watch what you watch. You better watch what you watch. I don't know how that phone does that sometimes. I really don't, okay? I look at Fox News. I look at a couple different just channels. I really try to get the headlines just so I can stay up to date. But it's amazing how many times even Fox News will say, and so-and-so at the age of 40 is still very in shape and has a bikini. Now, why would they put that on Fox News? Or this lady over here, and she just, why would they put that on? Because they want to have you step inside this thing about starting an appetite of pornography. Watch what you watch. And it says, set tremendous parameters. I don't get spam on my computer. I pay money for Safe Eyes and other things. I don't have anything popping up. That stuff pops up. It's just a little click there that says, maybe you ought to look at this. And some, I don't know where you are or how you are about it, but I'll just say this. You better make sure your windshield is clean. Make sure your windshield is clean. I'm going to say one more thing about this. I'm 69 years of age. I knew how to make love when I was in second grade. Because the pornography that's in my house. And you can hide it any place you want to, but little boys find everything inside the house. They see pictures. They see what's going on. Now, I can tell you something, that is a very difficult addiction to have. May I say this? Pornography in my day, watch this, I'm 69. Pornography in my day, it was bought at an adult state store. You had to go to a bookstore owned by the state. You went to the countertop. You ordered your Playboy, Penthouse, whatever it was. They went behind the counter. They got that. That was wrapped in a, looked like a brown paper bag. It was wrapped in that. No one could see it. And you walked out and you're okay. That was then. That's not now. You can find any piece of pornography, any type of book like that, on just outside in the open. In fact, just about on every street corner is an AM, PM, and they carry different magazines also. And now we are just flooded with pornography, and on our phones, and on the screens, and the night, and so forth. And so it'll take a lot of work just to say, no, I need to keep my windshield clean. I need to keep my windshield clean. Number one, all right, pay attention to all warning lights. Number two, keep that windshield clean. Number three, check the tires. Check the tires. What do you mean? If I ask the question, all right, are you and your wife getting along? You got great couples here. I know this is a church. But even a church like this right here, I'd ask the question, are you getting along? How much do you argue? I guess I'm so old-fashioned, and I don't just mean weird that way. I just believe a man and woman got together to be a man and woman. Intimacy is still bigger my priority, and I want to be in her priority. I am amazed about how many couples do not have intimacy. One out of every four married couples stay in separate rooms. I thought, what? Are these just statistics? No, I looked it up. One out of every four couples don't stay in the same room. Now, I did not get married to only be intimate with my wife, but I did get married to be intimate with my wife. I told you last night, I ain't sleeping with some couch. I'm not saying she has to. I'm just saying, but I'm not. Well, the one of us just have to leave. Well, honey, I'll tell you what. I don't have to touch you over there. I don't have to touch you on the couch. But I'm not going to get out of my bed with my sleep where I'm going to be. I'm not going to do that. I love you. I'm not going to hurt you. I've never lifted a hand. And I have no respect to someone who does. Bible says, husbands, to love your wives. Agape, that means deep, committed, abiding love. They need security. No pebbles, can't do that. Nothing with butterfly and buffalo. A few ways to do that, how to make that road smooth is, ladies like affirmation. They need that. Ladies are word people, okay? And so you need to be able to tell your wife, I love you. I love you. And I don't know about you, how often have you told your wife, I love you? How often have you told your wife you loved her when you really meant, I love you, I really love you? When's the last time you stopped your wife, maybe you sat down, took her face in your hands right there, looked at her and said, I just want to tell you something, babe. If I had it all over to do again, I still do. I'll do it again. I love the dream. I love the journey. It's you and me. We're going to conquer the world. Hey, girl, I'm in love with you. When's the last time she's heard that? Satan has an amazing ability to cause your wives to doubt. Satan has this amazing ability to take a little interest to her. You know, you don't look as pretty as you used to look, and your hair's not quite the same, and, you know, gravity is affecting your body, and all this other stuff. I've heard it all, you know. And she's inundated by all these things, and she needs someone just to lift her up, just to help her. Husbands, love your wives. Daily say, I love you. Tell her you prefer her over everybody else. Be the knight in the shining armor. Come to her side. Love her. Number one, take warning of all caution lights. Number two, keep your windshield clean. Number three, check the tires. Can I tell you something? Sometimes a minimal adjustment makes a huge difference. Ever put air in your tire? Man, it makes a huge difference. You're on a flat tire, and you're da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and everyone knows, you know. You put a little air in that tire, whoop, boy, you're right down the road. I'll tell you what, a minor adjustment many times can make a huge, huge difference. Number four, check the oil. Check the oil. What do you mean about that? Well, I just know if the oil gets low, the car runs hot. The oil gets low, the car runs what? Can you look up here for a minute? I don't mean this derogatorily. Is your wife afraid of you? Is your wife afraid of you? Are you mean? I can walk into that room after the session, look at my wife, roll my eyes. And I could hurt her. She's a butterfly. I got a chip in this game. I watched my stepfather. I watched him grab my mother. Grab the back of her hair, hold on that hair in the back of there, and just take it, just hit her and hit her. I watched the ambulance come inside my home. Pick up my mother off a floor, lifeless, knocked out, limp, bleeding, eyes bruised shut, put on a gurney to your other. Better check the oil. I've never allowed anyone to date my daughter, seriously, until I took them to an athletic event. I want to see if they lost their temper. I played basketball with them. It's okay. I mean, it's just basketball. But I played basketball with them, and I always want to guard them. Push a little bit. Push the buttons. Just to see if they ever get turned around and look at me like, if they do it to me, they'll do it to her. Brother Will, why would you talk about anger in a session like this? You tell me why I need to talk about anger in a time like this. It's prevalent today. Well, my old lady this, my old lady that, and you gotta control that anger. You gotta control that male dominance. You gotta control that voice. It's true, our voice. Our voice. It's just our mannerisms. And how we can just look and speak and, man, I hear that. I hear that voice. I just saw my mother just kind of shudder. We hated it. We hated it. Check the oil. Are you running hot? Do you bring work home with you? Watch your anger. So I said, number one, check all. Warning lights, two. Clean the windshield, three. Take all away the rough road, number four. Check the oil. And Pastor, I don't have a possession of this old well. A couple more minutes? Okay, good. Last one. Got to gas it up. Talking about our car, just got to gas it up. And how do we do that? Number one, can I just commend you for being here? It's big time. I'm glad you're here. That shows, I'm serious, you will score a lot of points with them. But most of the guys, we don't need this. We don't want to go to this. And that's our attitude, all right? I'll show you this. If I'm walking outside and I say this, honey, I'm going to go mow the lawn, I'll walk outside and do it. If I'm walking outside the door and my wife says, you are going to mow the lawn, aren't you? Not anymore. No, I'm not going to do it anymore. No, I'm going to do it on my terms. I don't want to do it. You're not going to tell me what to do. That's just how I am, right? That's probably a lot like the way you are also, okay? And I'll say this, that we are men. And that's, I detest feminism, and I detest effeminacy and things like I just detest it. And our whole world is throwing that upon all of us. I am asked to speak at, like the Beast Feast. You know, you want a man to come in there. I've heard this sometimes, Joe. We want a man's man to come in there. I don't know what a man's man is. Is it you got a large belt buckle? Is that what that is, you know? Or you drive a big truck that's got big tires? I don't know what that means. But let's say a man's man. So this is a man's man. I guess if I digress a little bit, here's just being a man. A man. Maybe he doesn't have 14 guns and a big old truck and the mounts in his house, you know, and all the other stuff. Doesn't have callus on his hands. But he's sharp, man. He's good. He's a man. So man's man to a man. If I took one more step this way, what would that be? Oh, he's I don't know, is Lloyd feminine? He's a little feminine. He's not really a man, but he's not, you know, he's just, he has some effeminate characteristics. Okay, what are those? Do we possess those? Society wants to put you right there. Society wants to take away your masculinity and make you look bad if you want to retain it. You're chauvinistic. You're a male pig. I was trying to be a man. But you make me look out to be horrible. You think your wife ought to father you. You think your wife ought to submit unto you. First of all, no, I don't. But God does. Because God knows what's best. I can tell you this. My wife is teaching your ladies exactly that. How to be submissive. It's kind of like we're the 18-wheeler, the main cab, the truck. There's this beautiful trailer behind there. That trailer needs that truck. That truck can do a lot of work. That truck has a very valuable possession, the trailer. And she likens men as that big cab truck up there. He's leading the way. He's pulling us along. We're that beautiful trailer. He's be back here. Big deal, and behind him, we're submissive to him. We both gain the enjoy the ride. So much has to be taught about this. And husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church, that he gave himself for it. You know what Jesus did? He served the church. He served. He gave himself to do that. And gentlemen, we ought to be in that habit of serving, helping, loving our wives. So, Gaston, how do you do that? Church attendance. First of all, thanks for being here. Church attendance. And Brother Pastor Eli, I think many of these folks are come Sunday morning. I think many, usually in a couple of, an event like this, most of these guys are probably Sunday night goers, maybe Wednesday night goers, and I'm glad you're here. So how do we keep this car running? Gas it up, all right? Have prayer time together. Have church time together. Have devotions together. My wife and I have been married 47 years. My wife and I have prayed all of our life long together. There's no doubt about that. But I can probably say in the last 35 years, my wife and I have not missed a day. Have not missed a day praying together. She needs that. She needs to hear. She needs to know that I'm on the right path, doing the right thing. Need to have prayer time together. Need to have devotion time together. My wife at this moment is just battling some things in her life about she loves being a grandmother. She loves being a mother. She was the pastor's wife for 35 years. She's no longer the pastor's wife. I'm no longer the lead pastor. 3 years ago, I realized our church to grow, we need a younger man like I to come in and keep it now for the next 20. I cannot do it for the next 20 years. I want to be here for the next 20 years if I'm alive. But I couldn't lead and do all the daily minutia, so we had a younger man come in and take that. That hurt my wife. It bothers me. It bothers that she's not the pastor's wife and she's not the maybe first lady of the church, and she kind of agrees to that. It takes a lot of work for me. We are not known by a position. We're known by Christ. Well, it's just my job does not define who I am. My integrity defines who I am, along with my wife. So they need that special care. How do we gas it up? Attend church. How do we gas it up? Prayer time together. How do we gas it up? Devotions. How do we gas it up? Gentlemen, if I could say this, I'm just going to wrap it up here. If you don't date your wife now, I'd ask you to do so. Most of us got our wives by dating them. And then we think, once I got them, I don't have to do that anymore. No, usually what you do to get them is what you have to do to keep them. And if you made a big thing of a date and you got things ready, you got the car cleaned and you got over there in time. In fact, I was talking to a lady out here and she goes, I liked your analogy about the cars. I said, yeah, that's good. She goes, my dad likes cars. I said, yeah. She goes, we had to take our shoes off before we got in the car. I said, that's pretty extreme there. I like that one, right? And may I say this? Your wife needs that extra attention. She just does. She is that butterfly. And be careful. Aren't you glad you got a wife who loves you? Seriously? Aren't you glad that she already knows you and she still likes you? That's a pretty good thing right there. We're pretty lucky. I feel blessed. I feel blessed to have the woman I do. I mean that. Father in heaven, I don't know if I said the right thing. I wanted to. I wanted to say it the right way. I hope these men will not have any anger. I pray they'll never be mean. I pray they never raise their voice. Why do that? Man, when a man raises his voice, he just shuts the whole house down. Everyone looks for shelter. Everyone kind of stays away. That's when a home becomes a house. I pray for these men to keep their eyes pure. That's hard in this world. You have to determine tenaciously to be a pure man. It's thrown in front of us all the time. I pray that these men will always watch out for the warning signs. My wife says, I don't feel loved anymore. Let's get on that one. My wife says, I'm unsettled. Let's get on that one. And then, Lord, may we just keep this car going. Regular maintenance. Couples clinics. Going to church. Reading a good book. Having a date. Hey, go to a bed and breakfast once a year. Get away for a couple of days. Turn your phone off. Lord, help us to do all these things to help us be better men. Help us this hour. For Christ's sake, I pray thanksgiving.